Police Academy is your source for the no apologies, no spin truth about all things police. Discussions about why cops do what they do, avoiding speeding tickets, or just how to stay alive can all be found right here. No questions out of bounds, no topic too sensitive. This is Police Academy. Do you understand
the words that are coming out of my mouth? What we're dealing with here, glittering air, is a complete lack of respect for the law.
And smoke in the reef.
Call the dust pop.
We live in a society of laws.
Dust pop?
Yeah.
No, it's not real.
This thing of weed.
Takes one solid weekend of training to get that bag.
Hello, ladies and gents. Welcome back to the Police Academy podcast. This episode is unique because this is the first time anyone has sent in a story through the website stories page. I mean, it's been so long since I looked at that page that I actually forgot it was there. So if you go to the website, policeacademypodcast.com, there is a link at the top called Stories. It's basically a police feedback form, an informal way for you to say, hey, this happened to me. This is what the officer did or said, and this is what I liked or didn't like about it. You know, the original idea with this was that I would contact the department and just give them the heads up. Hey, someone, commented on the service that was provided to them by your department, and here is what they said. And if there was, a positive story, then we would give a pat on the back to the officer by naming them in the episode. That was the original plan. If I have time, I will certainly contact the departments and let them know an episode is about one of their officers and do the pat on the back as well. This one, the positive story that came out of it, the writer doesn't remember the officer's name, so we can't do that. And since there are both positive and negative stories here, I won't mention the department. But anyways, if you're so inclined and want to share your personal experience with a police officer, a sheriff's deputy, a state trooper, basically anyone in a law enforcement type position, a security guard kind of qualifies, but feel free to go to that link on the website, Stories, and share what you have. Basically, it's, the form consists of your name. I won't share your name unless you tell me you want me to. Your story, your perspective on what happened, how you basically processed that incident, and, what issues you had with it. How could things have been done differently? It's basically your way of having a chance to hear your side or voice your opinion and be heard. As many of us know, unfortunately, police officers aren't willing or patient enough to listen to what you have to say and your reasons for, whatever you did or said or why you were speeding, etc. And sometimes we have good reasons and we just want to be heard. So there you go. If you want to do it, Stories link on the website, policeacademypodcast.com. Let's jump into this one. I'm not going to share the writer's name, but from 2015 to 2017, quote, I was a resident assistant at West Texas A&M University in Canyon, Texas. As an RA, I frequently dealt with residents who were having a hard time adjusting to the transition, living in an unfamiliar city with no friends or family nearby. I have two stories, one positive and one negative. Both are short, so I'll include them both here. Mid-spring of 2016, I received a call around 2 a.m. from a fellow RA. She had been contacted by a resident who believed that her roommate, let's call her Cindy, might have had too much to drink. Something that happens quite often on college campuses. Surprise, Mom. These kinds of calls were fairly frequent and usually involved us contacting the department there, who I'm not supposed to name, as most of our residents were under the age of 21. Surprise. I met my coworker at Cindy's room, and when we went in, we attempted to speak to Cindy, which we quickly determined was going to be impossible. She was laying on her bed, on top of the covers, in only her underwear. She appeared to be asleep, though when we tried to wake her, she remained motionless. Her roommate informed us that Cindy's friends had brought her back over an hour ago, stripped her down, and left. I stayed with Cindy and her roommate, and my coworker called the police since we were unable to wake her. When the officer arrived, we filled him in on the situation and let him into the room. He seemed pretty annoyed at being called for what he deemed a quote-unquote non-emergency. When we told him that an ambulance was on the way, he became even more upset. Quote, "You're wasting my time to deal with a sleepy drunk girl," end quote. He asked us at one point. Eventually, the ambulance arrived and the officer left, letting us know one last time that we had wasted his time and ruined his night. When Cindy came back to school a few days later, she told us that she had alcohol poisoning and had to have her stomach pumped. She was issued an MIC, minor in consumption, I don't know, MIP is what we would call it here, and had to do community service on campus. But she was grateful to have a roommate that was willing to, quote-unquote, rat her out, as it could have saved her from injury or death if not caught. My main gripe with the officer wasn't that he was annoyed with the situation. I understand how frequently this department deals with drunk kids on campus and how it might get to be a little ridiculous after a while. However, I hated that he thought we were overreacting, especially when Cindy ended up requiring medical attention, end quote. Okay, so in response to this, I understand both sides. Officers become jaded and forget who they're getting paid to serve. And if you work in a location with college campuses and or our campus police, it's kind of hard to justify acting annoyed when you get called to an MIP or alcohol poisoning type call, because that's pretty much your job. In the description, it probably includes the fact that you are going to deal with lots and lots of drunk college kids. And for that reason, I'm not going to cut them too much slack, although we all have our bad days, and maybe this was one of them, so we'll always leave that in our back pocket. Quite honestly, officers over time become jaded, and they forget who they're getting paid to serve, and often don't treat those people with the level of respect and kindness that they should. And this is an example of that. There's another thing I need to point out, though, and that is that officers all have a different idea of what constitutes a crisis. You know, we all have kind of this set point of, you know, when things go beyond this point, we go into crisis mode, and this is the end of the world, and the sky is falling. And when you become a police officer and do it for a while, because of the frequency with which you go through these types of true crises with all these different people trying to, you know, intervene and fix the problem and protect people, whatever, you know, stabbings, armed robberies, domestic violence, shootings, etc., your set point changes dramatically from, you know, where a normal everyday civilians is. What a lot of people consider a crisis and are calling you in a panic to come help fix or, you know, solve to an officer who's a little bit seasoned is just an annoyance because, you know, he or she was in the drive-through line to get lunch and now they're dealing with a drunk girl. So again, not cutting him any slack there, just pointing out the reality of the job and how it sometimes comes across to the civilians who end up interacting with the police officer. Okay, moving on to the next one. And this is a positive story. So there is light at the end of the tunnel. We can all sit around and sing Kumbaya at the end. I'm kidding. I'm not making fun of the story. I'm just being a dork. All right. Quote, "My second story is much more positive. About 6 months later, one of our residents contacted a different coworker of mine to let her know that one of the girls on her floor seemed off. This sounds like something trivial, but as resident assistants, our jobs included monitoring residents for signs of homesickness or even suicide. So my coworker and I went to the room of the resident that we were contacted about. Let's call her Jenna. We talked to Jenna for a little while, and she seemed sort of down. Her mom had passed away a few semesters prior, and it was hard for her to be away from her father and her younger brothers. We gave her a list of resources on campus and told her that she was always welcome to contact us. Then we left. A few weeks later, my coworker and I were contacted about Jenna again, but this time by a member of her own sorority. She said that Jenna had stopped coming to classes and sorority functions. So once again, my coworker and I went and met Jenna in her room. We talked to her, and after a while, Jenna said, "I'm thinking of killing myself." So, per RA protocol, we called the police and requested that they send an officer our way when one was free. We hung out with Jenna for about 15 minutes, and an officer, whose name I unfortunately can't remember, met us on Jenna's floor. We briefed him on the situation, and he talked to Jenna for close to an hour, just asking her about her life, how she was feeling, and why she was feeling that way. He talked about his own family, his wife and his daughter, and how terrible he would feel if his daughter ever felt the way that Jenna did. He gave Jenna his card, along with his personal email and phone number, and an invitation to as many dinners at his house as she needed. I am happy to report that Jenna was able to thrive for the rest of college. She started seeing a counselor, went back to her classes, and graduated a few years later, all thanks to that wonderful nameless officer. I will forever be grateful for the chance he gave Jenna. I firmly believe that he was the only thing that kept her from killing herself during a dark time in her life, and his incredible people skills will impact many for the rest of his career. End quote. Now, that's the kind of story that you're just not going to see in the mainstream media. And those are the interactions that police have with people constantly. No, I'm not trying to kind of tell you to look at police work and police officers through rose-colored glasses, but there is another side to police work that no one really gets to see unless you're Jenna or the RA who's, you know, calling the police saying, "Hey, this girl wants to kill herself." So a huge pat on the back to that nameless officer if you, by chance, and it's a long shot, end up listening to this episode. Well, good job. Well done. Keep it up. All right. In response to this one, you know, if you're listening, you might think, well, that's a pretty serious issue. And of course, the officer is going to take that seriously. Well, there are a couple of things. First of all, it is a dicey situation when you start responding to calls about, you know, people who were thinking of self-harm, because some of them, and usually it's the ones that are truly committed to doing it, will try to fool you and tell you that they're fine. For example, we were sent to a trailer park where, and I don't even remember what the call was for. I think it did relate to this young lady having suicidal ideation. I'm not positive. It's been a long time, but I do remember standing in this trailer talking to her after she initially refused to come out and talk to us. We eventually talked her down, got in the room, and myself and a more veteran officer talking to this girl. And she's, you know, talking to us like normal. And I had met her before. She seemed a little off, but, you know, was explained to us that she was fine. She was not suicidal. She said something because, you know, she was emotional, whatever. She was explaining it away and trying to get us to leave and trying to communicate to us that, you know, "I'm not going to do anything. You guys can go." Well, she had a bunch of medications in the room, and we had no idea how many she should have left of these medications. And, you know, she had taken any. So, you know, we start looking at her eyes and realize that she is, her pupils are extremely dilated. So we have the medics come and they make the same assessment and think, yeah, she's definitely having an adverse reaction, we'll call it that, to some sort of medication, and she wouldn't tell us anything. So, and she swore up and down the whole time, I didn't try to overdose, you know, I'm fine. We get her to the hospital. They find out, I can't remember if she said it or how we figured it out, but we realized that she had basically taken a bunch of pills, and they ended up pumping her stomach and probably saving her life. So these situations are dicey. As a police officer, you can't take people's word for it. You really have to treat it as a, you know, a situation like you do any other investigation, where you just assume the person giving you the information is trying to fool you and look for evidence. And it's really dicey for someone like the person writing this letter. I mean, she doesn't have the same protections that a police officer does. And if she walks away and Jenna kills herself, she might get sued and have no way to afford a lawsuit like that. Now, the other thing I want to point out is that these types of calls are just as regular, at least they were for me, as a DUI or an MIP call. I mean, they're multiple times a week. I went to a suicidal party type call and took someone into protective custody. It was a very frequent occurrence. So this officer could just as easily have been nonchalant and annoyed at having to go to yet another one of these, I want to kill myself kind of calls. And, you know, to his credit or her credit, I think she said it was he, but to that officer's credit, you know, they went in and did the best job they could. They cared about the person regardless of, you know, the stupid decisions, or at least stupid ideas that that person had in their head, and probably saved her life. So that is something to be commended, because it's a dime a dozen. That's a call that officers go on all the time, and they can become mundane. They can be annoying. Oftentimes these people who are the driving force behind these suicide calls are frequent flyers. You go to the same place, you know, weekly or at least monthly for the same person saying the same thing, you know, posting on Facebook, I don't want to live anymore, that kind of stuff. And it can start to annoy you, and you can start to let that show if you're not careful. One other story I have regarding suicidal parties that kind of highlights this was, you know, responded to a one vehicle accident. This vehicle had rolled out of a driveway and hit a boat or something across the street. Strange circumstances. I don't know. While we're dealing with this call, the owner of the car had to come out and, you know, get his registration information, etc. And it just so happens that he has a warrant. So his day just got a lot worse. So I handcuff him. I put him back in my car. I'm sitting there talking to him before we leave. And, you know, I start to get the sense that, like, something's not right. And he tells me, you might as well just take me to the hospital. And my response is, why would we go to the hospital? You just have a warrant. They're going to let you sign a piece of paper and walk away within probably a half hour of getting there. Why do we need to go to the hospital? What's going on? He goes, well, I'm going to kill myself. And so, of course, I say, okay, dude, why are you... Don't say that unless you mean it. That was my first response, I'll be honest. Don't say that unless you mean it. Because if you say that and there's something to it, then a whole different process is going to happen. And it's a lot more complicated than just going to jail, and which you will have to do in the end anyways, by the way. And he goes, no, I'm serious. I'm going to kill myself. And he said it in the most matter-of-fact way, to where it didn't make sense. Like, usually when people are saying something like that, it's emotional. And there was no emotion in this. It was just like, no, I have it all planned out. I'm going to kill myself. I'm going to drive down this highway to this clearing. There's a meadow and there's a tree. And, you know, it's about mile marker or whatever on this highway. And I'm going to hang myself in this tree. So you have to take those comments seriously. And, you know, the longer I talk to him, the more I realize, okay, this guy really does have a concrete plan to kill himself and is intent on doing that. You know, he's saying, I am going to do this. It doesn't matter what you do right now, where you take me, who you make me talk to, it's going to happen. I've made my decision. I'm like, all right. So, you know, I take him to the facility that handled our emergency protective custodies, and I'm logging him and booking him in, I guess you could say, into this facility. And one of the ladies there who sees this constantly, and many of these people just need kind of a cool down period to get their thoughts right, and then they're okay. And I'm sure that's what she was thinking with this guy. I explained the story, and she goes, all right, well, sounds good. We'll have him out of here in no time. And I looked at her and I said, no, you don't understand. I know why you say that, but this guy's legit. You really need to look at this guy and take your time, because he's gonna do it. Of all the people I've brought in here, this guy's gonna do it. So don't just shove him out the door. Really take your time and try to help him, because otherwise he's gonna follow through with this. The call was strange, to say the least, from the beginning to end, and mostly because of just the way the guy talked about his own suicide ahead of time. But it highlights the fact that, you know, a very routine call that I could have been annoyed about may have ended up saving that guy's life. And, you know, it also highlights the fact that human beings, this is a human factor, get comfortable and complacent when they deal with the same thing over and over again. The boy who cried wolf is a classic story that we tell our kids, because it is part of the human condition. It's part of the animal condition. We can be conditioned. We can learn responses to certain stimulus. And, you know, the person that was doing the intake at this facility was conditioned such that, you know, 90% of the time when cops bring these guys in, it's just because they made a suicidal statement and they legally have to, and we talk to them, they're fine, and we kick them back out. You know, she was operating under that assumption until I made it abundantly clear that he was not their typical customer. So with that said, next time you have a not so pleasant encounter with a police officer, just remember, it might not be their best day, and your crisis might not just exactly fit their definition of a crisis. It doesn't mean that they shouldn't put a smile on their face, but just part of the human condition. If you guys have stories you'd like to share, go to the website policeacademypodcast.com and click the stories link. Would love to hear more of them. And if you have questions, comments, concerns, gripes, bunched up britches, or complaints, please send them to policeacademypodcast@gmail.com. I look forward to hearing from you and to the next episode, as I know many of you do. Stay tuned. As always, do good, be strong, fear nothing. This is Police Academy.